is a Vencast Studio production.
We are back. Hey, good.
Welcome, welcome to episode 28 of Riding the Pine. I am Hondo here with Guy and AG. Welcome, AG.
Hey, glad to be here.
Glad to see you back in the building, Guy. So we are off and running. Episode 28. This is the Tarik Black episode.
Needs no introduction.
I was going to rock Sam Cassell, but you know what?
I put the kibosh on that.
No, kibosh. Kibosh is fully on, so we have to just go and get started. But you know how we're going to get started this week? You get 24 seconds. 24 seconds to give me your favorite story of the week.
Okay.
All right, Guy. Time it. AG, time
it. I'm on it, yep.
I think it's got to be, just from a very biased perspective, is the Wolves overcoming adversity, taking down the Warriors, taking down the Clippers, you know, putting a hard-fought effort versus the Bucks. That's probably my favorite story this week. You know, we've had a really hard stretch of schedule here, and we've been doing pretty well, so.
A classic tale of adversity. A classic tale of adversity, and we shall overcome. I really like it. AG.
Well, I have a story that didn't quite make headlines, but it should interest everyone here. Everyone knows my team, but this is about two different teams, the best and the worst.
Everyone, no. Everyone does not know your team on the podcast, so
okay,
please
reintroduce it. I'm a LeBron fan. My team is Cleveland. Oh, there. Okay. They're having a hard week, but let's not even talk about that.
Feel free to send hate mail directly to him, not part of @Ryden_thePine. Please.
Bring it on, yeah. Yep, so in news on Monday, I just want to say New York, Golden State, both won. They're only wins of the week. Guess who was their leading scorer? You wouldn't be able to choose because it wasn't in the starting lineup.
Golden State? Golden State. Ian Clark?
Yep, Golden State was Ian Clark. Yeah. No, actually, it was Iguodala. And for New York, Courtney Lee. But I think it just points to, you know, stacked teams, you know, trying to make it happen by bringing in all these players. Durant's hurt. Mm-hmm. And now you see that they're only wins of the week. Stars didn't show up, and they still won. Mm-hmm. And the rest of the time, the stars showed up, and they didn't win. So I just thought that was interesting.
Oh, the inverse star ratio here. Exactly. Oh,
so I'm still going to argue that, you know, the league needs to be a little bit more balanced and less focused on these superstars because they don't show up sometimes. And
Time is up.
I made my point.
Harden the paint. All right, I'm going to go a little bit outside of basketball, and I'm going to go to the fact that, why are slippery courts still an issue in the NBA? I cannot believe this. We make millions of dollars, the contracts are absurd, and we still can't figure out how to take care of a court. Like,
your favorite story of the week is a court?
No, it's a recurring court issue. It's like, we cannot figure out how to prevent slippery court syndrome. Like, absolutely should be able to do this. Like, pay somebody somewhere, somehow. Major League Baseball can take care of the grass. You can't take care of a wood floor?
Very true.
Preposterous. Absolutely preposterous. That's it. That's my 24 seconds. I'm done with that.
I like that sound effects. Yeah.
All right. I'm moving on to some game highlights. So you know what? We're gonna go right into it. We have to go right into it. There's no other option. So we are going to go right into gameplay. So we are going to go. Moving on to some game highlights of the week. We're going to go, gosh, we have to talk a little bit about our RTP game of the week, but we're not talking long about this. This is Warriors-Spurs from last night. This ended up being a 107-85 win for the Spurs. This was trash. This was trash in prime time.
It was over before it started.
Oh, God.
I think there's two takeaways from this. I think number one was the ABC ad for game day featured Zaza Pachulia.
Well, I think they edited
Paul Gasol.
I think they had to have edited maybe five times the entire week.
So. And then the second thing was the promo for it was like a bunch of people not related to the game, like LeBron and Bradley Beal and Kevin Love. And like other people like, it's game time. It's game time. And then someone from Reddit posted like the same exact duplicate version of that commercial, but with like edited for not playing today. So they had a Steph Curry for three, you know, like promo clip, and then someone overlaid, but he's not playing today. And then, you know, like, Kawhi Leonard, you know, taking that three over Kawhi. Harden.
Kawhi now on vacation.
Yeah. Well, see, you have to read between the lines. ABC is so smart that they sent out a message that says, "I know you. There's no reason to watch this game, but watch it because you love the NBA and all these other players that you won't see today."
This was really interesting to me, though, because the game was not, but the whole like ramifications towards ABC, the media, everyone who's pouring money into the league, they're getting backslapped.
Like,
everyone's resting on Saturdays now. LeBron has rested on multiple Saturday night games.
Just turn on the ABC movie of the week.
It's not even worth it. It's a 9-to-5 movement, you know, Monday through Friday.
Unbelievable. All right, let's go away from that garbage game. I don't even want to talk about the rest of that. Hey, Guy, there was a much better game in our games of the week. Let's start off with the Wolves Warriors from 3-10.
Yeah, sure. So probably in no order whatsoever on their list.
Yeah.
This wasn't necessarily the best game of the week, but from a bias standpoint, the Wolves took on the Warriors. It was like a pretty interesting game where Curry was off all game. Draymond had no impact. The subs like Ian Clark and Patrick McCaw were like irrelevant. And so it was basically Klay Thompson versus. And Klay Thompson had probably 35 points or something. And we, the Timberwolves, were up by 17 at one point in the second quarter. And I watched this game with a few other friends over at downtown. And the entire bar was University of North Carolina versus Duke.
Yeah.
And one little dark TV in the corner for Steph Curry. One little corner TV. And
yeah.
It was obnoxious. And everyone there was just like fair weather college basketball fans.
Yeah. Well, so welcome to March. So.
Welcome to March. Welcome to Friday night. Like, what is that? What's happening? And so no one was watching the games. And then here's this little corner with four people like fucking cheering over like a cat dunk or like, yeah, or like a Clay three or something. You
that's
know?
Where
like,
the addicts come. Yeah, yeah. Back in the corner by the one TV.
Yeah, yeah. And anyways, you know, Wiggins had an awesome game, kind of carried us in the second half, but Cat was just unstoppable in the first half.
Yeah.
Scoring, you know, another 28-15 kind of game. It's just fucking natural now.
Yeah.
I think he's one of the more unstoppable players in the post right now. Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable what I'm seeing. Very biased statement there.
It's understood, but hey,
I wonder if this is sustainable or not, because we noticed in the Milwaukee game that Wiggins on an off night, we just can't compete. But this game, you know, back-to-back years where the Timberwolves dethrone the Curry Warriors.
Yeah.
You know, you got to feel really high about that. You got to feel really good about it. And there are some amazing game highlights from that. I would love to share them all, but maybe we're just going to keep this rolling.
No. We'll keep it rolling.
I don't know if you guys watch any highlights of it.
It just shows their potential. You know, Wiggins is very solid. He always has been, in my opinion. Yeah. So it's just a matter of where is he going
to
go next?
I mean,
next?
He's connected to Cleveland. So, I mean, I feel like that would be in your opinion anyways, wouldn't it?
Well, my non-biased opinion, yeah.
Anytime that Wiggins is assertive and he's switching to those green shoes, he switched shoes mid-game.
I like that. Yeah. I like that.
He had his like Adidas white shoes that were supposed to be you know sponsored to wear or whatever, and he switched to his green shoes
so
after the first quarter.
I think that should be a protocol almost if you're having an off game.
But anyways, all I'm going to say though is, because he had a really quiet first half, all I want to say is when he's assertive, we are really hard to guard.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we've completely bought into the Tibbs system. Like earlier in the season, we were like, what's happening? Why is Tibbs putting Rubio in the corner? Why is no one, you know, rotating? Or and now you're seeing the number one defense in the league, the Minnesota Timberwolves.
I love that.
Since the All-Star break. It's a very short sample of games. But
Gig, can we talk about one aspect of this game in kind of doing prep on this game for the games of the week and everything?
Yeah.
Minnesota, they opened up strong in this game, but it looks like they really struggled to close this thing, especially in the fourth.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
it might just be like, you know, in quotation marks, like tired legs or anything.
Okay.
Because they're playing heavy minutes, the starters are.
Of course.
But like, it's a hard fought game. It's a really scrappy game against Golden State.
Yeah.
Against the Clippers. You know, you got to put that in mind and perspective. Calls aren't going your way. You got to get that attitude out and just play your game.
Sure.
Yeah, it's really hard to close against Golden State because Golden State's Golden State. Yeah. They can score at any time if they want to, if Curry, you know, doesn't shoot for cancer, you know, so.
as long as they're hitting their threes.
Yeah. And, you know, yeah, we missed a couple free throws. We missed like four or five clutch free throws towards the end of the game. We had built a 17-point lead. We had held Golden State under their, you know, scoring threshold per quarter by like 8 or 9 points per quarter. So we were just completely crushing them. Clearly, we were the more aggressive, assertive team. Mm-hmm. And just through the attrition of the three.
All right, let's continue to move on. A couple other games of the week. Boy, this second game here, this is a likely matchup between MVP candidates, which is crazy. We're going to get into the MVP candidate discussion a little bit later. But this is the Spurs versus the Rockets on 3-6. So this last weekend, Spurs ended up winning 112-110. Boy, this thing was crazy, though, because 39 points apiece for both Leonard and Harden. Harden has 35 points through the third in this game. But when I watch this thing, I guess I am so enthused about play from Leonard on both sides of the court. He has a block on Harden that shows everything about what his game is.
Yeah.
And it's just like you can't – he doesn't get the attention that Harden and Westbrook get.
Nor does he want it.
And he doesn't need it, but he is showing it on the court of what his game is at.
Yeah, I think that just speaks to the Spurs mentality. You know, we had the players before him. We had Duncan. We had Robinson. They all spoke to the same sort of credence.
Right.
But in essence, their game showed, regardless of the attitude that they had. You know what
I mean? You show consistency in your game. It's not flash. It's not the attention, but you show and you commit to winning. And that is what they do.
And another thing is, I want to throw this out there. I think Leonard has earned his name. Harden has the beard. Let's just start calling Leonard the Braids.
The Braids?
The Braids.
Gotcha.
I think, you know, it speaks volumes. He's hardcore. You know, he's not from the streets, but at the same time, he plays like it. And, you know, he speaks volumes when he's on the court. So
absolutely. This is not that big of a stat from this game, but the I did see that the Rockets did attempt 39 threes in this game, and that may be light for the Rockets, but I'm like, wow.
D'Antoni.
D'Antoni wants them to shoot 50 threes a game. It's part of their, you know, regimen now. This game was interesting because it was a matchup of like completely different play styles.
Yeah.
And they competed to this 112-110 outcome.
Yeah.
And Spurs don't necessarily run the gamut in scoring. They usually have a very like a cadence to the pace.
Mm-hmm.
And Houston is trying to do it 7 seconds or less. So they try to do lobs. They try to do threes only.
Yep.
And it's really fun to see the differences in style come together, clash against each other. And then you see Kawhi defending their best player. You see Harden kind of sagging off, resting on D. But it's impossible to play in the paint against Houston's bigs because Houston's bigs are great at defending the paint.
No doubt.
And it was wild. And it was funny because this entire season, Kawhi was an afterthought because it's been Russell Westbrook. It's been James Harden. Is LeBron, you know, playing too many minutes? What's happening with Curry? Kawhi's quietly, without really trying to be punny there, quietly.
I love it. Yeah.
Now, like, towards the top, he's, like, in consideration, if not one of the favorites now.
That's
because they're, what, a half game back, if not one full game.
Yeah, they've already clinched a playoff spot.
One, from the top seed. And it usually goes to the top seed, right? This has been a very unprecedented season.
Yeah.
Where there's a gamut of people to talk about for MVP. Usually it's a very clear one or two choices.
Yeah.
But
that speaks to the power at the top right now.
Yeah.
And the diversity of players at the top.
And he may not get the media spotlight, but I think at the end of the day, nobody would argue if he were to get the award this season.
I think there will be some arguing just especially with him and Westbrook about what Westbrook is doing. But
I just meant like not an argument, but they'll say it.
No, no, it will be deserved. I think it will be deserved. It will be earned by whoever gets it. Yeah. I think they're all putting up numbers.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be controversial, but I do think it'll be unanimously not unanimous.
Yeah, unanimously not unanimous. I will agree with that. All right, let's move on to another game here. This is from last night. This was an amazing game. So Brian, one of our friends from NBA Thursday, was actually at this game down in Portland.
So
this is the Wizards over the Blazers from last night, 125-124. Boy, the Washington is down by 21 at the half in this game,
yeah.
And they come back and they win, but Wall absolutely crushed it with 39. Beal has 26. I was watching the highlights on this game as well, and Wall should have actually won it. He had a pretty open jumper to win this game.
He just
missed it. It just rimmed out. So he really should have closed it at the end. However, how this game is won is probably the biggest issue of the entire game for me. Because Morris actually steps out of bounds before he takes the shot. So it should not have counted.
Right.
But I don't know what the NBA is going to do. They'll bring it back to New Jersey and they'll sit on it for a while and they'll give a decision that will not impact the outcome as they always do.
Unfortunately, you can't rescind a win.
I don't know. Actually, like, I'll defer it to you, Guy. What can you actually do? Can the NBA actually reverse a win, and what are the ramifications if it happens?
Well, they've had this happen like 10 years ago when they did a replay of like 40 seconds of a game, and I don't think they ever want to do that ever again. And so they have this, you know, recent like 2-minute report that tries to, you know, alleviate some of the pressure off the refs, but also hold them accountable and make them a little bit more transparent in terms of their calling. And they're probably going to release the statement says that was an incorrect call that should have been but then slap on the wrist, move on. Washington still wins. It's a very impactful little moment there. But, you know, in the heat of the moment, 5 seconds left, you're not looking at someone's foot position. You're looking at, like, mostly contact. And, you know, they didn't call anything usually at the end of the games, you know.
So yeah.
People get away with a little bit more towards the end of that, you know, shot clock in the end of the game.
Sure. But this this is a good win. A very good win for Washington, a come behind win that they I think will give them some momentum as they continue to move forward.
Yeah, Damian Lillard even posted on his Twitter, like, he posted a picture of this exact picture, the frame when he's out of bounds.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh man, four eyes on the ball, huh? And then he has the eye emojis. Eye emojis. So he's probably gonna get fined for that. But.
Oh yeah. All right. So the last game is not really it's about what didn't happen as opposed to what happened. And this is a Boston win over the Warriors on 3-8. This was a 99-86 win. The Warriors just were struggling this week. They got they kind of got crushed in this game, especially off the bench. There was only 17 – I was looking at the stats here – only 17 points off the bench for the Warriors, which is not consistent with normal production for them. But I suppose if they're sitting people and everything, that could potentially be the case. Pretty light night from Curry and from Thompson. Kelly Olynyk has a pretty good game, 17-5-5. Warriors are really, really struggling in the fourth, 9 turnovers, and just not showing it. My favorite point of this game is Curry was Curry's definitely talking shit to, what's his name?
Jaylen Brown.
Going back to half court and just like, you're not Curry at your absolute highest, but you're still one of the elite players in the league. Mm-hmm. So it's like, hey, sit down, rookie. Don't talk to me like that. So,
but then Jaylen Brown was on record saying he wasn't even talking to Curry. So Curry was in his own head the whole time. Curry was just trying to like pump himself up.
Okay.
Honestly.
Okay.
I don't think it had anything to do with Jaylen Brown. I was like, I swear, I promise you. Like, he
just,
was like
just
very apologetic to nothing. You know?
It's like DMC starting fights with reporters that he doesn't even talk to.
All right. This was a really fun game. You know, it was really crazy that in Golden State there were chants of MVP for Isaiah Thomas.
But Isaiah Thomas continues to live up to his rep in the fourth. And it's just like, I don't know. I don't know what to say about that, but it just continues to move throughout the season. It's like, hey, that factor, that process or that syndrome of what you do in the fourth, that's just going to go away. That's just a short-term thing.
Right.
It's not. He just keeps living up to that hype.
Go ahead.
If I could add something, I just think the Isaiah Thomas thing, it's an amazing story. It's sort of the underdog, and I'll say the under 6 foot dog in this sense. And people are gravitating towards it. You know, it's you hear about this amazing ability that everyone has or gifted with, and in terms of somebody coming in who doesn't fit the stature of a normal NBA player to be doing what he's doing, I just think it's really inspiring.
Yeah.
And in some place like the Boston Garden, which has so much history, I like this story.
No,
I like what he's doing.
Yeah. I absolutely like the story, and I think you know, it was funny. Even against Golden State, like the best team in the league record-wise, he is capable of outscoring Golden State. I think Golden State only had like 12 in the fourth, which is their season low for quarter output. Wow. And I think they only they did end up with 86 points, which is super, super low for them. But wow.
I just remember Mitch saying something about Isaiah Thomas, and it's like ever since he said something about taking him over Kyrie Irving, like, you know, my mind was blown then, and it's like coming into fruition now, and I just got to bow down to Mitch.
Shout out to Mitch from NBA Thursday.
So. I remember there was a question or like a post-game question asked to Isaiah Thomas just about like, you know, He just crushed the Warriors, but then he's being asked about being the 60th pick in the draft, and he's like, "I'm over this shit. Like, stop talking about this. Like, I'm now me. Stop talking about what that was. Like, I don't care." And I remember he going off on that, and I was like, "Damn right, stand up for yourself, you little 6 foot little pumpkin guy."
So was it this week or was it a prior week in which there was like this jump ball between Thomas and someone else?
Tyler Ulis.
Sorry, what team is he?
Phoenix,
okay. And he's like, what is he, like 5'10 or so? Or?
Yeah, both of them are under 6 feet. It was 5'9 and 5'10.
It was like, I saw that, and I'm like, I was scratching my head. I'm like, this doesn't make sense for a classic jump ball in the NBA. All right, let's move on to some highs and lows from this last week. There is some incredible stats. Key kicker off.
Well, this week, actually, we haven't even talked about this team or him or anything. What Dirk did this week is, you know, not necessarily unprecedented, but it's a very small company. He gets to that 30,000 point milestone that only, you know, five other people have ever done. You know, we got Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, Karl Malone, Wilt Chamberlain.
Man, that is elite company.
That's the list. That's the list. And Dirk Nowitzki, you know. So it was a pretty cool moment, you know.
Mm-hmm.
After that shot, I think Lakers called a timeout and everyone was mobbing Dirk. And, you know, his shooting coach, who's been there for like 20, 30 years.
Sure.
Is in tears. A really cool moment for the NBA in general. But that's not it. Like, that's not the only world-breaking stat that happened.
Sure.
Russell Westbrook is now in a league of his own with the most triple doubles in a regular season history.
Wow. Wow.
Surpassing Wilt Chamberlain, who's also in another category.
I mean, it's just the fact that we're getting to mention names like Chamberlain and Jordan and Bryant against present company, you know, just it brings back how awesome it is to be an NBA fan right now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So
yeah, and then more on Westbrook because he's not done. He's going, you know, he's shooting his lights out. He's shooting for everything possible this season. Well, the NBA's single season record for usage percentage is actually Kobe Bryant, 38.5% or so.
Yeah,
in a season, I think they actually won the title, the 2006 season. Oh no, that was Dallas.
Okay,
one of Westbrook, his best seasons though.
Yeah, yeah. Westbrook has completely obliterated that. Right now he's a 42.5% or 42.2%, and it's probably not stopping. just think about that. Like a short spurt of games, you might see like a 60% usage, but over the course of a season, it's under 38%. That's Kobe Bryant, and he's at 42.2.
Gosh.
It's crazy how it's just a one man show in OKC.
Gosh, that is absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
LeBron is adding some of his own stats. So over the last seven games, he has four triple-doubles and seven double-doubles. So it's a double-double in every single game.
Yeah.
God, I mean, it's just outlandish how long until Vegas just allows for just betting on triple-doubles? I mean, it can't be that long. I'm going to go check it out next week while I'm in Vegas. So Vegas, just get it ready for me. I'm ready to bet on the triple-doubles.
Nice.
I mean,
he's going 27.2 on 54% field goal percentage. And I know, I think there's a stat where he's actually shooting better from three than Steph is currently. Like, as a three-point rate, not like attempts or anything.
And if I can have my non-biased opinion, he's doing it all effortlessly, too.
Steph-ertlessly.
That's the name of the episode. I believe that's the name of the episode.
But, you know, he's also leading the league in minutes played. It's really crazy. And he's
when you're the MVP, you know, you gotta play when it counts.
There is no bias. This is the no bias episode, episode 28.
Only kidding, guys. I'm only kidding.
Did you say MVB or MVP? Most valuable Bron?
It was gonna start sometime. A little bit more on the highs and lows. Let's talk a little bit about points. Westbrook is going off 143 points in four games this week. 110 field goal attempts. So is it possible that Westbrook could score like 240 in a week? Maybe. He just rains everything down.
I think he had a career high 58 earlier. 58
and a loss.
And a loss to Portland.
It was still beautiful to see.
Yeah.
On the assist front, John Wall is doing a solid 11 assists per game, 55 assists over the last five games. All right. So, any other highlights on the highs and lows stat front?
These are kind of like general phenomenons. So this season, Steph Curry was like, we'll say the past couple seasons, Steph Curry was the story. Like, LeBron's reign might be kind of coming to an end, sorry. And Curry is kind of reigning supreme, right? That spiciness, right, from three, taking over the league by shooting from anywhere. It's kind of hilarious how his brother is kind of taking a little bit of that luster, that magic from Steph. And Seth is shooting better than Steph.
Oh, gosh.
Now in the record books, it's like S.E. period Curry, as opposed to just like this, you know, this Steph Curry. It's like Seth and Steph in categories together now.
And do you throw Dell in there, too, just to really confuse the stats?
All out. Let's get Eddie in there, too. Right? But no, Seth Curry has a higher effective field goal percentage from three. 58%, 44% from three, then Steph, which is, 39%. It's been so crazy, though, because, I think, Steph actually surpassed his father in terms of career points and everything, which is crazy, which is cool and everything. And I think Klay is on his way, too, this season. But Seth Curry on a kind of a scrappy Dallas team has kind of quickly did this, like, 180 on the season where they were trash and they were playing with trash.
Yeah.
And the trash kind of became garbage men picking up trash. So like Yogi Ferrell, Seth Curry, Nerlens Noel, and then a resurgence of Dirk. Like he's 40 years old.
Coming back.
Yeah.
Well, talk about an unprecedented motivation for Seth. I mean, you have your brother who's a star of the league and you're also on one of the worst teams in the league. So he almost has this dual motivation that's really pushing him.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool to see him. And
I gotta beat my brother and bring old man time Dirk into the playoffs here.
Yeah. So we've been talking a lot about Russell Westbrook in terms of what he's been doing this season, but what hasn't been doing is taking care of the ball. Right.
Mm-hmm.
He's also he's not alone in this, but he's breaking the NBA season total record for turnovers in the season later on this year.
Mm-hmm.
But guess who already has?
None other than James Harden.
Yeah. It's ridiculous, but he has he's on pace for over 150 to 200 more turnovers than himself last year.
We need like an an operations management company like IBM or something to sponsor James Harden with the number of turnovers that he has.
Yeah.
Just, man, where is your efficiency?
But hey, I mean, on a positive note, though, this is kind of crazy, but James Harden could miss the next 4,731 free throws.
Where did you find this? Well, this is deep in the internet.
This is deep. This is a deep cut. He could miss the next 4,731 free throws and still have a higher career free throw percentage
than DeAndre?
Than DeAndre Jordan.
That's pretty bad. That is beautiful. However, the stat that sticks out to me is, and you'll have to explain this a little bit more, but who has been the most clutch player this season in the last 2 minutes of these close games? And explain to me exactly how the percentages work here before we dive into the percentages.
Oh, so what does it mean to be clutch if you can make a shot? So a percentage is in the last 2 minutes of a very close game, which is 5 points or under as the NBA has decreed.
Okay.
What's the shooting percentage? Westbrook is at 44.5%.
Oh, this is their shooting percentage. Okay.
And Curry is sub 25%. KD was at 47.5%.
Yeah.
LeBron for 48%. Guess who's leading the league in the clutchest moments of the game?
Damn it, Gee. Damn it, damn it, damn it.
Dion Waiters with
50%. Dejon Waiters. I'm not giving him his name. I'm not giving him his name. Unbelievable. He's just like even at All-Star break, I was having trouble predicting him, like the success that he's been having. It's just like we do this every week, and that guy just snuck up on us. And I don't know how to take it into consideration, but we're going to talk about the impact that he's having on Miami as we talk about what's going to happen towards the lower ranks in the East.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk
about. No. We got to keep going.
All right. Do it.
Some more unbelievable things. DeAndre Jordan could miss the next 475 shots and still have the highest career field goal percentage in NBA history.
That's called winning.
That's insane. All he does is dunk, but if he misses 475 dunks in 17 games, he'd still have that throne.
We need StatGuide in the building to calculate the most missed dunks out there, because yeah. I want to know that for the archives.
Well, let's put that in perspective for, just normal people that are not in the NBA. You can miss work for 6 months and still get a promotion. You know what I mean?
That's right. That's good. That's good. But here's the best, dude. This is the best find. I have to say, I got to pat myself on the back. So the Pelicans,
yeah,
since trading Buddy Hield, Buddy Steph Curry Hield, right?
Yeah, of course.
For Boogie Cousins, they haven't won a game where he has played in the fourth. They are 3-6 since he's joined the team. In those three wins, count it. Cousins was suspended for the first win. He fouled out in the second win in the third quarter, and he was benched in the fourth quarter. He's now bench material. That's crazy to me. Pelicans are a wild team right now. They're like signing dozens of people just trying to see who could fit, who can score points at all for them in the 10-day contracts. I don't know if you've seen the Rolodex of who
this is like the guard through. Scramble.
Yeah, the guard scramble, like with eggs. And it's just
and Davis tweaked a little something this week too.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that works.
He tweaked something, he came back and scored 46 last night. So tweaking what?
He's like, they don't know what's
going on.
It's
common knowledge that he'll be out every week for a game just because of a knee or a brow or something. Yeah. You know what I mean?
So it's like, of course.
But then he comes back with a game like that, and you're like,
I thought something.
If only he had players with him, Boogie Cousins. You know, it's like, it's wild.
Gee, do you have any more just mind-blowing stats for us this week, or are we gonna move on to the lighter side?
I have a very lighter side stat for you.
Okay.
So Saturday, the worst day for a primetime game for everyone sitting out. San Antonio Spurs sat out everyone from France on beyond. And Golden State sat down everyone. They started Patrick McCaw.
Yes.
Patrick McCaw is like, shit, give me the buckets, man. Like, this is my time to shine. Show that I belong in this league, because he clearly doesn't. So far. He's been starting in place of Kevin Durant, which has been also obnoxiously absurd. He played 42 minutes that game. The 42 minutes versus the Spurs.
Mm-hmm.
2 points.
2 points?
He's a shooting guard. 0 for 12 from the field. 2 free throws.
Welcome back to the main Red Claws, Patrick McCaut.
He was given the reins, and he was like, you know what? O-Man's Lounge instead.
Knock on the door. We got a seat for you in the back. Yeah. All right. That's a perfect segue into some other terrible moments and the other cast of characters that showed up at the O-Man's Lounge this week.
Oh, man.
One more time. Oh, man. Firepower's taking a hold on me. I need a wonder. Oh, man. Man. Okay, beyond that. So, gosh. Terrence Ross, just a horrific 29 minutes over 5 versus Charlotte. God, that is awful.
He was traded for Serge Ibaka, who had, like, a career game the other night. Jerry and Grant, 12 minutes, no points. Randy Foy.
Do we give a group discount though to Brooklyn, because we kind of expect it from Brooklyn,
but we don't want it to. Like, they want to win, right? But clearly, as a starting shooting guard in 24 minutes, your goal is to go 0 for 6 versus Yogi Ferrell. Like, that's who's guarding you, the smallest dude on the court, and you can't make a shot. It's crazy.
The O-Man's Lounge is not some hipster bar in Williamsburg. It's like someplace you want to try and avoid Brooklyn. Let's get out of there.
The reason why the Pelicans are trying to find shooters is people like Solomon Hill scoring, you know, 0 points, a negative 20 in a complete beatdown by Utah in 20 minutes. He's got Ron Baker, he starts, apparently. Ron Baker starts in a win, mind you. Ron Baker starts. He's a shooting guard with a ton of hair. 2 shots, 0 points versus Orlando, but they win, okay?
Okay.
But Lance Thomas, in a following game... This is, oh, let me, a little backstory. Ron Baker started in place of Carmelo Anthony.
Okay.
Carmelo Anthony sits, they win. Lance Thomas starts, Carmelo Anthony's back in the starting lineup. Yeah.
They lose. This goes back to his theory.
Yeah.
Jesus.
28 minutes, 0 points because Carmelo's on your team. And then, you know, we got to give a shout out to TJ McConnell. Representing the 76, 32 minutes, leading the helm, you know, like six assists.
Yep.
0 for 8, negative 16, and a beat down by Portland.
Man, that is a lot of people coming through, and we're running out of seats at the O-Man's Lounge this week. This is not a good time to do it. This is your time to shine, as teams need to be making a run towards the playoffs, especially at the bottom.
Well, players need their rest, you know.
Their rest, but when they're on court, it's you know, it's best to turn it up just a little bit.
You got the ice bath, you got the hyperbolic chamber or whatever they're called. I don't think it's hyperbolic.
It's probably not hyperbolic.
It's like the cryo or Cairo, whatever, Cairo. And then you got the O-Man's Lounge.
Then you have the O-Man.
With pretzels and cheese.
Of course.
Moon cheese.
Oh, man. This is tremendous. You know what? You really don't want to join us in the O-Man's Lounge because all we're going to do is criticize you. So put up some points and get on our awesome moments for the week instead. All right, so we have a little bit of an audible this week. We're changing our 5 insane plays of the week to a segment called Who Wore It Better. So this is a comparative analysis for things like game-winning shots, dunks, half-court shots, whatever. Two players showdown, and we vote on who we thought wore it better. So first off, we have Devin Booker with the game winner over Dallas on 3-11, and Markieff Morris with the game winner over Portland on 3-11. So, who wore it better?
I'll say Markieff Morris. You know, it was a hell of a shot. He has a twin brother as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, just like I do. So I'm being a little biased. All
right, I got it.
The twin brother bias for the game winner.
I got to go with Devin Booker because it was sweet justice. Just a turnaround fadeaway classic. And... the fact that he was trying to race off the court afterwards was awesome because it was an away game versus Dallas. And I just think just like the poise, you know, like for a second-year player, it was pretty great, pretty incredible.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And so you got to break the tie.
I'm going to break the tie, and I'm going with Devin Booker because Morris is a fraud and should be removed. Devin Booker's crossover and steps against Dallas were crazy. That was an absolutely insane shot. It's actually in contention for top 10 plays of the year.
All right, so who wore better? CP3's like half court like leisure heave, or Jamal Crawford from the same team, not from the same game, the same team half court shot versus Memphis.
I love the way
I was trying to look at the name again.
CP3 or Jamal Crawford?
Jamal Crawford. I love his jump shot all the way.
Yeah.
So you got Jamal Crawford. I'm going to take Jamal Crawford, but I also want to second the fact that we're going to hashtag leisure heave as a patented term here on Ride the Pine. All right, Guy, you're going to break it for us.
No, because it's already too...
Okay, sorry.
Like Jamal Crawford.
Are we going unanimous, though?
No. We're moving on.
Oh, okay. All right, moving on. I'm going to butcher this name, Guy, so
I'll just say it for you. Yes. Scalabissere.
Okay. So he's going over Denver's offense. He throws down a monster jam a few nights ago. Or Marvin Williams over Bismack Biyombo. I believe this is a couple days ago. These are both insane dunks.
So did you see these?
I saw Scal.
Scal. Well, I haven't seen these, so I'm going to go with Scal.
You're going with Scal? I'm a monster Marvin Williams fan, so it's going to be a 2-1. Oh. It's going 2-1. All right, so that concludes the inaugural session of Who Wore It Better. You know, we're looking for clothing sponsors for that segment in particular. Yeah. So definitely reach out to us.
Sponsored by Oshkosh Begob.
As it should. All right. Hey, we're going back to the three-man weave. It's been a couple of weeks since we've been able to do this, but we have some deep diving this week. So where are we getting started?
I think let's start it off pretty light. It's wrapping up, right? The season's wrapping up. We got 17. We got a month, like less than a month left.
Yeah.
It's wild that we've been doing this for the whole year. And the season's gone by so quickly. Seriously, I have no idea how the season went by this quickly.
Well, it's recorded in all of our episodes, so I feel like we've been a part of it.
So as the season's wrapping up, usually there's like a really interesting bout for like the 6-7-8, 5-6-7-8. But just straight up the 8th seed is like crazy this year for both sides of the conferences. For the East, you got Miami, Milwaukee, kind of like Detroit's floating in there, Chicago, New York, Indiana might be falling a little bit in the standings. You got Charlotte being like, what the hell happened to them? Mm-hmm. Like, who's actually going to take it?
Yeah, it's a lot of Again. Surprises. The East, you know, we always say it's the weaker conference or the weaker sort of,
It's just a way to describe this conference.
Right.
Keep going.
But at Indiana, I think, you know, Paul George is already waiting on the bus to L.A. I'm not really kind of putting my money in him.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Sure.
Miami's been solid, surprisingly solid.
Yes.
I mean, they have...
It's a testament to their coach, dude. Yeah. Like, seriously, Spoelstra just unleashed the season without Wade, without Bron.
And they've just been hanging in there. You know?
Yeah.
Hanging in there. Miami's been 8-2 in their last
20-4.
Yeah.
They're 20-4 in their last 24-5.
God, that's absurd. But, I mean, the Bucks have been pretty hot, too. They're 7-3 in their last 10. Yeah. So it's like, so then it's a question.
So I think it comes down to those two, you know, with Milwaukee and Miami. All the other ones I'm not really going to count in there. Their consistency doesn't really speak to me. So it's a matter of, you know, who's going to hold in for the long haul at the end of the season.
All right, but I want to go with a crazy scenario. Is there a scenario in which Indy doesn't make it and everybody else moves up? You have Detroit and Milwaukee and Miami kind of rounding her out? Because, I mean... Really, the Pacers are only one game ahead of Detroit and Milwaukee and the Bucks.
But then you're looking at the Bulls and the Hornets. Bulls, no way. I mean, they're just too
inconsistent. I'm never looking at the Bulls.
Yeah.
Sorry, there's no.
I mean, I just in terms of standings there, you know. And then the Knicks, yeah, right. I'm not even gonna
see. But the Hornets are still there. You know, they started the season 8-2, and they're starting, and now they're like almost 10 games under 500. You know, it's wild what's happened with them. And relying on, you know, big white dudes is not necessarily the answer.
Yeah.
But, like, the Heat, the Bucks look like they're going to solidify maybe both spots, the 7-8. Because Detroit, Indiana, they're not necessarily moving the needle at all right now.
Mm-hmm.
And Detroit, I think they're lucky to be where they are. Because in no way, shape, or form are they better teams. Are they a better team than the Heat as currently composed?
Yeah.
And the Bucks.
So they're... I guess they should be, there could be a crazy potential then that, let's just say for just the sake of this argument, that the Hawks stay at five. Okay,
that they are.
We'll keep the Hawks at five because I mean they're a few games up anyways, but then 6, 7, 8 could like go 6, 7, 8 in the order that you think right now.
Personally, I think it's gonna be Milwaukee at the 6.
Okay,
Miami at the 7, and Pacers at 8.
Really? Okay,
I can agree with that. I kind of see that happening. I would maybe even say the Heat at 6. Milwaukee at 7, and then round it off.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so it's almost like...
So Detroit doesn't make it on either of our boards. What about you?
Man. Okay, I'm gonna take the Heat at 6. I'm going to take the Bucks at 7. Man, I'm gonna take Detroit at 8.
All right, so Indiana misses the playoffs. See, that's wild to me because they bought in this season. They got Al Jefferson and Jeff Teague.
I just think they have too much talent.
Monte Ellis, Paul George. But Paul George has been checked out all season.
But it's so close. I mean, I could be wildly wrong, but it's going to come down to the last couple of games in terms of how this is decided. But I think given what Miami has done, I think they're the absolute favorite. They are in. Absolutely. In terms of the Bucks, yeah. In terms of the Bucks and the Pacers, man, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
This is just feel. But yeah. Like, and a lot of it's probably just straight up guessing because we don't know what's going to happen. But like, you know, just looking at their standings, look at what they represent. Indiana was an offensive minded team with a coach that's, you know, half of what they were last season. Detroit had like a 4-1 type of scenario where everyone was supposed to stand on the perimeter and Andre Drummond shooting lob and jams and stuff like that. Milwaukee's probably the best defensive team out of the four. Mm-hmm. And the Heat are probably the most composed and orchestrated team out of the four too. Like they have plays that they run, mm-hmm. and they have, you know, the most efficient, you know, clutch player in the league this season, Deion Waiters. And they are like running plays with James Johnson at the helm and they are crushing it. With LeBron, like a LeBron James light style play of being more of a distributor for James Johnson.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I definitely think Milwaukee and Miami of the four are the better teams. And it's crazy to me because of just how the season started and how the season's panning out.
But you know what's also crazy is that as of right now, let's just extrapolate it forward, that the 8th seed, even potentially the 7th seed, just where this could end up, they may actually be under 500.
Oh, the chances are pretty high.
I mean, that
same goes for the West. Actually, it's going to be guaranteed.
Okay.
And maybe that's a good transition point to go to the West.
Okay.
So the West now, who's going to take the 8th seed? I think 1 through 7 is kind of locked.
I mean,
they're going to shuffle a little bit. Like Memphis might go up and down. I think they're really kind of tailing off right now.
Yep.
They're switching their lineups like daily. Thunder are peaking right now. The Clippers are in no man's land. But let's look at the 8th seed. Denver kind of has a strong case for just locking it in right now.
Mm-hmm.
They're a couple games ahead of Portland. The New Orleans is still in this. You know, Minnesota's in. Portland, Dallas.
Of course.
Just throwing that out there.
No, of course.
So, you know, Denver kind of has a relaxed schedule, strength of schedule compared to, like, Minnesota, who has the hardest schedule of the rest of the league. So it's, like, it's going to be really hard for Minnesota probably to get in. Denver has, like, that cap. But is there a chance that, you know, Dame Lillard and Jusuf Nurkić or Yogi Ferrell and Steph Curry, or
maybe,
you know, Dirk Nowitzki, they make that second half, that season-ending push?
Well, I'll say that with Denver, I've been watching them over the years, yeah. You know, fighting the Lakers. It doesn't matter what position they're in. They're so scrappy that if you need a win,
yeah,
it's going to be the hardest thing in the world to get from Denver because they're just such a scrappy team. So sure. It's hard to say that, you know, this team is going to move in front of them towards the tail end of the season because they always seem to pull it out some way.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'll kind of tail on to that sentiment that Denver, I think Denver has enough in their tank to keep the A seed. I haven't seen enough from the Blazers, and the Blazers they have to not only turn it up, but they have to turn it up even more than the Nuggets, and the Nuggets have to go on a relaxed schedule. So I don't think we're going to I personally do not think that Denver is going to slip from the eighth seed. Yeah. But you never know what when Lillard turns it on. Mm-hmm. When Lillard turns it on, things can change. But I think this is going to come right down to the end. Given the way that these teams in the bottom have been playing, though, they're playing about 500 ball over the last 10 or so. That I don't think they're going to have somebody's going to have to get on a hot streak in order to change this sentiment.
Yeah, so like 15 to 17 games left, right?
Yeah.
Like Denver has to go under 500.
Yes.
In 17 games. So that's like
they're not going to. The playoffs are on the line.
That's not going to happen.
The playoffs are on the line, so they may not go 8-2 or 7-3, but they go 6-4. That's going to force the Blazers basically have to
go 8-2
or 9-1 just to stay in this to make it even. And I haven't seen a Blazers team that the Blazers are not good enough this season to do that.
Right.
Not against this competition. Not going into the playoffs.
Maybe even looking at their record, it just depends on who has the most road games from here on out. Because they both have terrible road schedules.
I mean, it's crazy because Minnesota and Portland have to play each other three times in the next 17 games. And they're like in 2 weeks apart, you know, like three times in 2 weeks. Dallas and Minnesota play, Denver and Minnesota play, you know, and New Orleans, who bought into this second half push, is clearly looking up, being like, wish we were there.
Yeah, I mean, it does make it interesting, and I think there'll be some fun games as teams are still vying for it, but I think in terms of practicality, in terms of what the stats are suggesting, that Denver sticks in the eighth.
I think, unfortunately, as a Timberwolves fan, and a hopeful for the eighth seed, I think it's Denver's to lose right now. So I definitely will probably not lock it in, but have a 99% chance that's going to be Denver.
Okay.
So, but it's been a really fun conversation in the past couple of weeks, but it's definitely been kind of like recently just been kind of solidified, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. But like moving on a little bit from just like, you know, what's been such a historic season, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was a historic season last year.
Yes.
Golden State Warriors took it upon themselves to break Michael Jordan's, you know, like not legacy, but Michael Jordan's single season record. Michael Jordan and the Bulls.
Yes.
Sorry. 73-9. You know, they had losses to like the Clippers and the Kings and Utah and Minnesota, but 73-9 was historic. But they didn't win the championship. They actually lost, and everyone knows it.
You know, yes.
3-1 lead.
They lost. You know what? You could say history lost to history because.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about a season that ended in such, you know, great fashion.
Right.
You had a historical run, only to be beat by a historical run by a team that wasn't even favored. So
yeah, but so I, you know, it's hard to phrase this question without sounding like a freaking idiot. Yeah. Like, if you don't win it all, are you just a loser?
No,
second place
I don't think you are, because the level that players like Westbrook are playing at this season is unprecedented.
Okay.
It's completely unprecedented. So I think it only rises the caliber of the game. You're not. It's funny, you know, saying that you might be a loser in terms of what the overall records are going to suggest. Mm-hmm. In terms of where you land in the playoffs, where your team lands, but like historic performances will live the test of time. Mm-hmm. That I think that's where it belongs, and I'm completely okay with that.
Right.
And also the way that things are shaping up, especially in the West with Golden State, that I think it's going to be an absolutely amazing playoff run, because I think we could see a little bit of variability.
Yeah.
Especially in the West, which I wouldn't have predicted even a few weeks ago. And I also think the East is, I don't know, I'm feeling some upset potentials going on out there.
Sure. So like basketball, it's a team game.
Yes.
So let's make it a little bit more individualized right now.
Sure.
You have like, you know, a Michael Phelps or like a Usain Bolt. Let's say they are doing like a marathon, or like they're doing like a, you know, a mile swim, or Usain Bolt's doing their, like, you know, 200-yard dash, and he comes in fourth place.
Yes.
Michael Phelps comes in fourth place.
Yes.
Is that, but they've been like a godsend, you know? So
yeah.
They were breaking records, but for not, because they didn't place.
Sure.
You know, for example.
Well, you know, I based it more on consistency, to be honest with you. Because if you've seen, and I'm going to cross sports lines here with, you know, Belichick and the Patriots, yeah, and with the Spurs, mm-hmm, they're always there.
Yes.
You can never count them out. Mm-hmm. So regardless if they won or if they lost in the second round last season, this season it doesn't matter. Just like with, you know, last year, the historic comeback from the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Right.
The next day, the Warriors are still favored to win it next year. You know what I mean? So yeah, it's more about that consistency, how much this threat remains. Mm-hmm. Sure. And in that sense, it's hard
yeah,
to say.
Yeah, but in the moment, to the point of this question, like, yes, you're going to get looked down upon. You lose 3-1, like, oh my God, like, why did you do that? Right. I think you get looked down negatively, but I think historically, to AG's point, historically you're still recognized appropriately.
Okay, so this is the point of this whole, you know, conversation has alluded me to Russell Westbrook and what he's doing this season. I think I understand the consensus here.
Yes.
What you guys are going to say. But I just wanted to kind of pose the question.
Sure.
So Golden State is not necessarily breaking any records this season. They're going to kind of go with a very, you know, casual 60-win season. But Russell Westbrook, who's an MVP-caliber player, mm-hmm, who's, you know, probably not going to get the first seed. Mm-hmm. Golden State might get the first seed. Russell Westbrook is breaking barriers, breaking records, and could average a triple-double. Probably will average a triple-double by the end of the season.
Sure.
Which hasn't been seen since, like, Oscar Robertson.
Mm-hmm.
Will Chamberlain, right? Like, hasn't really even been seen. But what happens if he just gets swept in the playoffs? Like, what happens if he does this historical individual season,
yeah,
right? The 58 points, the 114 field goals in a week of games.
Sure.
And he gets swept in the playoffs. Let's say he doesn't even win MVP. Let's say he doesn't even get MVP votes. What is he doing this for?
I think there's two lenses.
Yeah,
There's definitely two lenses. There's an individual contributor lens, and then there is a team lens. I think as these players look at it, they want to look at the team lens first. So I think Westbrook would be devastated, but just piggybacking on what I said earlier, that he will still stand the test of time for his contribution for the season.
And I agree, but I also want to point to, you know, something we mentioned earlier with Kobe Bryant's usage back in 2005-06.
Right.
You know, he had that run where he scored, you know, 60 points in 5 games in a row, and it was just it set the NBA on fire. You know, it was this talk of the town. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, the team didn't go anywhere because they were garbage.
Right.
So I still think that it's going to mean something to him and his legacy,
mm-hmm,
no doubt. I mean, it's going to stick with him forever. But there comes a time where you have to prove something. You know, like Jordan before he got Pippen and then Phil came in, scoring all these records, you know, 63 in Boston, you know, that kind of thing. It'll always stand, but at the end of the day, you're still going to need those records and those rings to make it mean something.
It's going to be interesting, right? We're going to talk about the season years from now, talking about Russell Westbrook. Right, it's going to be about Russell Westbrook.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm not done with this, though. Like,
okay,
this is kind of a meta discussion now about Oklahoma City.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Durant left. Serge Ibaka got traded. You know, Reggie Jackson wanted out. James Harden wanted out, essentially. So if Russell Westbrook doesn't re-sign, like, it would be kind of crazy if he doesn't.
Yeah.
Who goes to OKC? Like, who would rebuild? Who would want to go to OKC? Also, who wants to actually go to Oklahoma City to play with Russell Westbrook in this, like, individual quest year after year after year? Because I don't think he's done, dude. I don't think Russell Westbrook with this, like, Black Mamba, all eyes on me kind of mentality is going to rest and be more of a distributor. He is great in what he does, dude. He's an unbelievable anomaly in the league, right?
Mm-hmm.
But who's going to want to come and play there, like, and play third, fourth fiddle? Like, I feel like we've talked about this briefly.
Sure.
But, like, Oklahoma City in a meta discussion is in a really weird area. Like,
they're
not going to contend anytime soon. And though they've been pretty smart in the draft, like, who's been staying in Oklahoma City after the first 4 years? Not very many people.
So let me just ask a question to further clarify on your statement here.
in terms of OKC, who do you think, what position would be most impactful for them to actually bring in, first and foremost, so we can potentially filter it down from there?
Like a Kevin Durant replacement. Like someone who's like a 3-and-D, a person who can score, who can take over, who can give a spell to Westbrook. Someone like a Paul George. Like, Paul George is not going to Oklahoma City.
No, Paul George won't go.
He's a self-absorbed player. Like, you know, who? Deion Waiters isn't going back to Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
Like, just, I don't know who's in the league who would go to Oklahoma City. You know, it's Russell Westbrook's team, and he could leave it at that for, you know, for the next 4 years, 5-6 years, if he gets that extension of 200 plus million. But he's in Oklahoma City, you know, like.
Yeah, he needs support. Yeah. And it's just, I don't know, that player isn't coming to my mind. It's just, I don't know. I have to continue to think about it.
It's funny. I keep thinking about past teams, you know, from the 90s. It's almost like, you know, you had Jordan and then he had all these complimentary players that, well, you said, yeah, he played with Jordan, but you don't think about anything else he did. So it's like, what combination of players does that fit in today's NBA? You know, who's the Steve Kerr? Who's the Walton? Who's the Rodman?
Exactly.
You know, that kind of thing. You need all of those players, in essence, for him to be successful.
Yeah, it was just a funny kind of train of thought while I was thinking about this. Like, what's happening in Oklahoma City, really?
Yeah.
And, you know, this season is historic for its own right. You can't take away what Russell Westbrook is doing.
Absolutely not.
Even if he doesn't win MVP, he wasn't a starter for the All-Star starters. Not that that matters much, but he wasn't a starter.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, God.
Steph Curry has been abysmal compared to Westbrook in terms of production from an individual standpoint, but Curry was a starter.
Yeah.
This season will go down in history, but is it meaningless? No. But is it very meaningful? I'm not too sure.
If he could tie it together with some championships down the road, I think that it would be really meaningful.
So then, yeah.
But if he can't, I don't think so.
I honestly think that this is a discussion that's we're gonna go back to this in the dog days and really, really dig into this, because this is an amazing thing that'll have me pondering for weeks on end. But I'm gonna have to try and stay in touch with all of the playoff basketball that's about to come on us. So that's absolutely man, mind is spinning, but don't have enough time to digest it here.
From playoff basketball to more of like the teams that are kind of in that mix for the draft right now, they have there's three teams specifically, Milwaukee, that's probably going to be in the postseason, honestly.
Yeah.
But just when I phrased this question, they weren't exactly there. But Parker with Jabari Parker. Sorry. Joel Embiid with Philadelphia and Zach LaVine with Minnesota.
Yes.
This season, this offseason, they are all eligible for potentially max extensions.
Okay.
Okay. And they, if they are healthy, and they could become restricted free agents as well. So given their injury situations, because ACL, Embiid has only played 30 games in his 3.5 years, you know, like, do you, as Embiid, if you were Embiid, would you leverage your position as the best player that's come out of Philadelphia for a long time?
I think you have to.
And get a max after playing 30 effing games. 28 minutes, like 30% of 30% of a season, you know, like he played only half the minutes of games of half the games in the NBA.
But I think this is unique because with the other, you know, Parker and LaVine, they played more, but did they prove more?
Right. And I don't know the answer. Also, you know, Zach LaVine was doing wonders, almost like, you know, breaking records in his own right in terms of most improved, in terms of 3-point percentage and everything.
Sure.
As a starter. Solidifying the shooting guard position, but then he went down with that injury. Since then, the Wolves are kind of on this little mini tear.
Yeah.
Not saying that LaVine's the issue.
Yeah.
I'm not at all, actually. That would be very...
No. Definitely not suggesting that.
No, so. I'm not saying that. But, you know, how do you handle LaVine when you also have to max Towns, when you also have to eventually max Wiggins, when you have to probably pay Rubio in a couple years? Okay, so now, Jabari Parker.
Yeah.
Milwaukee's situation is kind of in flux because they have a lot of money involved in a lot of players right now, like Greg Monroe, you know, Tony Snell, and, you know, Greek Freak is making 100 mil. And so,
yeah.
You know, and they're also paying Chris Middleton lots of money. So, like, but Parker's up for that too. And Parker was a huge reason for their beginning start of the season. You know, since they lost Parker, they kind of had that dip. There's a lot of, you know, things in the air.
So let's,
do they have to max Parker? Do they have to max Embiid? Do they have to max Levine? Okay. Let's hear it.
So let's take it kind of one by one and just go around the table here. Embiid is a really tough case because the amount of time that he's actually played, to your point, over the last couple of seasons makes him a huge risk, not only for Philadelphia but for other teams. So he is he is a consideration that it will just kind of blow a lot of teams' minds in terms of what it's like. He has this potential, but if he can't stay healthy, it's a huge, huge gamble for those teams. So I honestly don't know what to do with Embiid. Obviously, with his star power and what he's proven this season, I think Philadelphia would want to try and sign them, but they have to be looking at the risk that's involved.
Yeah, I agree to that point. You have to factor that in. There's been so many stories before that with Portland and other players that just come in and you put all your money and then they go down again. And it's like, well, you saw this happening before. You know, the writing was kind of already on the wall. So it's almost scary to invest in a player like that.
It's very scary, and I would say it's short-sighted. If they pay Embiid,
mm-hmm.
they could really screw their future up because like, they don't even know
like Brooklyn Nets level or
yeah because with all their assets they've been accumulating, like 17 second round picks and all this other junk that they have, you know, they have potentially two first round picks this season too. Like, what is their gain if they now have to pay Embiid and then have all these rookies that are, you know,
you're right,
for themselves,
the process just continues.
The process continues and they have no idea what their team is because they have Simmons, Saric. Saric is their best player right now. Embiid is unproven, but, you know, and Ben Simmons hasn't even stepped on the court. And they might get, you know, a number one draft pick. And then they have to really see who's going to be paid. Otherwise, you're going to get a Garnett-Marbury situation, right? Like Marbury leaves for New York or New Jersey or something like that because sure. he's not paid the same amount as someone else.
Yeah.
Embiid gets paid but is not playing. What's that saying for the rest of the team?
Yeah.
It's crazy to me. I say don't max him.
Don't max him.
But then Embiid has the leverage.
No, he
Embiid
does.
Embiid is Philadelphia right now.
Yes.
So I am so confused by that.
No, he I don't have an answer. I don't have an answer. I think that just from a marketing to the, like, you're really going to piss off the Philly fans if you let go of Embiid. Yeah. But the longer term prospects and the risk level, mm-hmm. it might suggest going otherwise. I don't know. We're going to have to revisit that one
but
more time.
But to A-Game's point, man, like, it's screaming Greg Oden. Like, it yes. is screaming Greg Oden. Don't fuck this up, Philadelphia, because I'm rooting for you.
Yep.
Okay, so Jabari Parker, just quickly, like, I don't think you max him either.
No.
He's had two ACLs.
No.
Like, seriously.
No. I think he's a bigger risk than Embiid is, and Milwaukee is still winning, and I think that he doesn't have as much leverage. I think he still has a position somewhere in the NBA, but he's going to have to test his free agent value.
Yeah.
And that one's pretty straightforward. I agree okay. on all.
Okay.
Yeah, I feel like it's more gray than I initially thought because – more of a gray area than I initially thought because they were doing so well in the beginning of the season, and Jabari Parker was like, torn ACL, ha. Huh. You know, he was averaging 20-plus. He was getting fucking all-star votes.
Yes.
Like, he was leading in the power forward position for all-star vote. Like, he was in the conversation, rather.
Yeah.
Like, he was going the distance and, like, proving doubters wrong. Like, he's not just a Paul Pierce clone. He has his own game, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't know what to do with him either. And that's what I asked this question kind of just to leave it open-ended, honestly.
Yeah. No.
Because I don't know what to do with all of these players.
I feel a little bit more decisive on Jabari Parker and probably not bringing him back in.
Yeah.
But no, I think it's okay to kind of sit and wait and continue to ponder this and continue to discuss this. Now, Levine is actually, boy, Levine is a really interesting scenario as well. Mm-hmm. Man, he's shown his potential, but obviously you have to keep the money on the table for Kat and for Wiggins. So and what Rubio is still showing and what he continues to show, it's like do you take somebody like Levine and potentially move him as a free agent or let him be moved and potentially bring in a veteran to support that cast. I mean, I continue to think about that rationale. Not that LaVine is not an excellent player, but he's gone down once, and we still need to solidify some veteran leadership on this Minnesota team.
I'm going to work in Guy's point with him being improved.
Yes.
There's a level of most improved that I see a difference in. There's Kawhi Leonard, most improved.
Yeah. Sure.
Because where he came from to where he is now is ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
With LaVine, I don't see him ever getting to that point.
Okay.
So I would judge it on that. Kawhi Leonard, max player, center of the team, you need him. With LaVine, yes, he's a good player. Yes, he's improved. But at the same time, I can see him as a wing on any team.
Yeah. So in Tibbs' system, it took Wiggins a while to understand like where to be position-wise. And he was kind of brought in as one of the more defending NBA-ready defenders and has kind of proven doubters right in the sense that he's been kind of weak in team-oriented defense but great as an individual defender. And obviously, he's defending the Kawhis and the LeBrons on a nightly basis and then has to score 20 points. So Wiggins has a lot of pressure on him, and he's been given the reins right away. Mm-hmm. LaVine has been kind of toyed with a little bit. Like, he's been starting... Mm-hmm. Not starting as a point guard, as a shooting guard, as like a super sub, as like barely plays. With multiple coaches, he's not really shown his moxie until this season, to your point of him not being most, you know, really improved to the level of Kawhi. No one improves like Kawhi. Kawhi came from San Diego State without a jump shot. Just fucking massive hands. God. And now, you know, that's just a meme right now. Like, he's completely transformed.
But it also speaks to his potential, though, because what Kawhi showed is where he could go with it. And I just, right now, I guess, I haven't seen enough evidence to say that LaVine can reach that level, even if he's given more time.
You know, 100% guaranteed LaVine will not reach that level. I see him more of like a Jamal Crawford than I do see him as a Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah.
I see him more of a super sub than I see him as this defensive monster.
Sure.
But he has MJ, Kobe all over him. Like, in terms of comparisons, like in terms of what he could do
as an athletic ability,
as well as taking over games, because I know you weren't watching the Wolves much, but he was probably our most clutch player in close game situations, because Wiggins would hold the ball, pass to LaVine, LaVine could playmake for himself. LaVine, with 10 seconds left, could get a shot 3 or 4 times in that 10-second frame. Okay, we're not necessarily going off topic too much, but like LaVine is improved, was in candidacy for most improved in terms of he upped his point average by 8. He was top in the league in terms of 3-point percentage at one point in the league. He's not just a dunker. From an Eastern Conference lens, maybe everyone thinks he's just a dunker. He got injured. He played the most minutes in the NBA before he got injured. And I think, you know, part of the system was Tibbs bought into LaVine, who bought into the system.
Mm-hmm.
LaVine was like a no-nonsense player. To Tibbs' credit, he bought in to Zach as a starting two guard, not as a defender, as a shooter, as a Klay Thompson, as a Jamal Crawford. Does a Jamal Crawford in the NBA today get a max contract?
I don't think he does.
Does a 22-year-old Jamal Crawford get a max contract?
But does a Tim Hardaway Jr. in today's league get a max contract?
Seriously.
What he's been doing.
You know, yeah. Yeah.
He's been... I mean, he has amazed me in several different...
He's the reason why the fucking Hawks are in fifth place right now.
Yeah.
So I would say that. You know, that's my argument. It's like, from what I've seen, I would probably give it more to a Tim Hardaway Jr. than I would to...
That's crazy.
A LaVine right now.
You know, that's crazy to me. Like, because I don't know the answer to this, but I just do know that, you know, money is going to have to be on the table this season for the Timberwolves.
Yes.
And if we don't address it correctly, shit. Because Shabazz has to be paid.
Yeah.
Wiggins has to be paid. Gorgie kind of got paid.
Yeah.
Towns will be paid in 2 years.
Yeah.
Like, and he's going to get a max. Mm-hmm. He has to get the max. Wiggins will probably get a max. And you can't have 3 players on max contracts, can you?
No.
So
not if you're in Minnesota.
Not in Minnesota. So it's crazy. And will LaVine settle for less? And I have no fucking idea. It's just...
Well, let's keep it out there. Yeah.
The Lakers are available.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Get the fuck out of here.
That ends that.
I knew that would draw some controversy.
That ends that. That's controversial in and of its own right. All right, so we're going to move on from the three-man weave to This Week in Basketball. A little bit of kind of activity, and starting last week, we're talking about players of the week as they're not announced till Monday. Yeah. Just some predictions of what happened over the last week. I think that Bradley Beal, with what he's putting up in the East, is a pretty solid contender.
Real deal Beal.
So for the player of the week, I don't know. I'm either going between Russ and Harden, which is ironic, but in terms of output, in terms of what they've done over the last week, I would expect to see any of them. Thoughts or changes to that list?
Maybe LeBron. Maybe
LeBron just keeps winning like every single award.
But
you know what? He's stepped it up though. Yeah. Because there's a level of LeBron where he's consistent, and then there's a level of LeBron where he's like he's taking over and
sure.
he's helping him win.
But do you think he has it over the last week? Because he just received it, I believe, last month for February.
Right. Not in comparison to February, no.
Okay. Right. Okay. So we'll continue to see that.
And it's got
to
be Russell. I don't know.
Like, yeah. Yeah. No,
it's got to be Russell.
It definitely has to be. So we have to talk about one injury here, which it could be pretty big in the long run. And that's you don't think it will be?
It's minor. He's had this condition since he's been in the league. He's always missed a week or two.
Okay.
Consecutive years in Portland.
Okay.
He has this like heart arrhythmia. And it just kind of offbeats itself. So he's out for a couple weeks. And
But is it going to end up like a Chris Bosh situation over the long haul?
Who knows? I heard it's a very minor thing.
Dinosaur blood?
I heard it's a very minor thing. Yeah. And people, I don't know.
We need somebody from we need a doctor to come in for RTP. All right, this is a call out to all doctors coming in. You're invited to NBA Thursday here in Seattle because we need somebody on to talk about injuries.
Yeah. We'll send it out in Morse code.
We have to talk. So I took this out before because I'm like, why are we talking about fines? We got to talk about fines because fines have amped up over the last couple of weeks. Right. DMC is just a fine machine. He got a $50,000 fine for inappropriate language directed towards fans, which I find extremely, extremely hilarious. And just like, yeah, I could definitely see it from him. Typically, he'll direct it to reporters, but you know, if fans get in it.
You got to nip it in the butt right there.
Yeah, you know? But there's another huge fine that came out this week, Guy.
Yeah, to both Brandon Jennings and Jared Dudley for their altercations in a game that was so meaningless, right? New York and Phoenix, like $35,000 a piece, like that's a chunk of their salary.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. It's crazy to me because like this is like the ramping up of fines is happening in the NBA, right. And like you're seeing like the 5,000 like flopping fine, or like you're seeing like the 10,000 inappropriate language towards the refs fine.
I got it. I know what's happening. Adam Silver is upgrading to Adam Platinum.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I'm going to take a more political position on that, in terms of this being just a very outspoken time. I think there's a lot of players, you know, just like with the Iguodala situation over the weekend, you know, it's just sort of players are getting more outspoken. You got Draymond Green, you got Iguodala, you got these players that are just speaking their minds more, and it's getting a little out of control.
Yeah, they're speaking their minds, but the NBA is certainly trying to control that communication, and if people are violating that in any manner, they are stepping right back in. But they are still way better than the NFL, and I will go on record as saying that each and every time.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on from fines to a little bit of lighter news. This week we have a brand new animated film from Kobe called Dear Basketball that debuted at the it will debut at the Tribeca Film Festival. It's scored by John Williams.
Of
like
course.
What? Kobe, you can do anything.
Yeah.
He said that. He's like, I want to get creative. Yes. I want to get creative. So what's Dear Basketball about? Do we even know?
It's about Kobe.
It's probably the struggle.
Oh, Jesus.
It's the struggle of winning the rings and winning the fame.
Big Three news continues. So what's happening in the Big Three?
AI unveiled his team name. You might know this name.
I love it.
It's called Three's Company.
Well, I'm just
He's a fan of the 80s sitcoms.
So. I'm looking forward to seeing what the logo is going to be. Is the logo out?
The logo's out.
Oh, gosh. We gotta keep them going because they've been incredible thus far. We talked about them on the last episode.
I think we've said this before, but you know, move over, Dad. You know, Steph Curry passed Del Curry, and then you know his scoring list.
This episode is now brought to you by Ancestry.com for all the Curry references in this episode. All right, we're gonna close out this episode going into this next week in basketball. So RTP game of the week
is actually tonight.
The Cavs versus the Rockets. I think that should be a great game. A couple of games of note include the Jazz versus the Cavs on 3/16. Even though Memphis is skidding, Memphis versus the Hawks on 3/16 is an interesting game. Pelicans versus Rockets. Are Pelicans going to show up in this game? But I think it is a game of note. There's some just average games, so it was tough to pick the cream of the crop this week. There are some terrible games. Our worst games. Our public service announcement out to you: Knicks versus Nets. That may be a big thing in New York, but it is not a big thing across the NBA. In terms of Golden State versus the Magic, that is garbage. However, if Golden State is sitting people, that may actually be a competitive game. And Magic versus Suns is one of your contenders for worst game of the season. So definitely stay away from that thing. From obscure games, we're going down to Victoria in Australia for the big V League. We're going to see the Ringwood Hawks versus the Waverly Falcons.
Way down under.
Way down. Way, way, way down under. So if you're on Twitter, follow us at Ryden_thepine and at GeeDota, at How3, at VexedIntellects. If you're in the Seattle area, please come join up with us at NBA Thursday. You can find us on meetup.com, NBA Thursday. All right, so that's going to bring us to the end of episode 28. Gee, where are we? What's taking us out this week?
Still on their feet. Those two possessions of the second quarter. Dirk got one shot. He's about to get another one. Down low against Larry Nance Jr. Here it is! He's done it! Put on a show to do it tonight. Needed 20. Did it by early in the second quarter.
What a show.
Remembered is associated with Dirk to be immortalized in statue one day.
Sorry, Larry Nance Jr. It happens. Sometimes you're there for 30K.
But had to be somebody.
Yeah.
If I'm Dirk, I'll go ahead and go full ice cube.
That's it. Go watch some basketball. We'll be back right next week.
This has been a Bencast Studios production.